listener production.
You are listening to episode 209 of the Howie Games Part B, featuring Sarah and Jack Jones. Continue. So you're in Bougainville. How do you find out that they've dropped the wireless?
You know, right.
Do you remember thinking, "Well, that's going to be the end of this"? Or
Well, we thought so because I was playing cards in a cookhouse. It wasn't a cookhouse; it was only a tarpaulin over where the cooks used. And there was stray Japanese. They had an aeroplane going over with Japanese surrender underneath it. You know, dropping a quarter of a million, 250,000 leaflets, saying that the war was over.
Right.
But the Japanese, like we, wouldn't have believed it unless it came officially.
Right.
And they attacked us where we were, our A company. And I was playing, and the rifle was around there and everything like that in my tent. And my tent got blown away, and a chap that was, we had a two-man tent. And he was in there, but he was below the ground. We used to dig down about 18 inches and had our bed. So if any shrapnel or that came from the mortar bomb,
yep,
it'd go over the top of us.
Right. So he slept in a hole.
Yeah. He wasn't sleeping, but he was in it, you know, laying on his bed having a rest because the war was over.
Yep.
And that was 2 days after the war finished.
Do you remember the – you remember – when it's over and you know it's over, is it relief or, as you say, that's the end of the job?
Yeah. Can you remember it was relief. It was relief.
Can you remember that moment when you thought, right, I'm going to survive this, I'm going to get out of this?
Yeah, we're definitely, yeah.
Take us to that time.
But then when we got attacked, we had to have our guns and everything, like the war hadn't finished because there were still raiding parties around. But even in New Guinea, they were still finding Japanese in the 60s, still living on, you know, off the land.
Was it elation, Jack, or was it relief, or was it a bit of everything when you thought that?
Bit of everything, I think, Mark. I think it was relief, you know, that they were going home. And then they wanted us to, when it was over, you know, a month or so, and they wanted to, we couldn't get a ship to come home. And they wanted an occupational force to go to Japan, but you had to be 6 foot. So I believe that this is just hearsay. And
right.
They asked me, I said, no thanks, I'm going home.
Yeah, fair enough too.
But a lot did go.
That's
why there was a lot of Australian men married Japanese girls.
Right.
Yeah.
So they went over to Japan as the occupational force.
They went
out
with the occupational force to try and get them. That was a silly part about it, I thought, to get them back on their feet. And, you know, but before that, we were killing one another.
It doesn't make much sense, does it?
No, it doesn't make any sense at all.
We read a lot now, Jack, about, I guess, the effects of war, and there's words for it that I have no understanding of, like post-traumatic stress disorder and words like that, where people come back from a combat zone and it stays with them for a long time. I don't want to pry into your personal life, but did you have problems?
Nah, never had any problems at all. But a few of our blokes did.
So blokes did struggle with what, I guess, if you've seen people.
Oh, yeah, some of them used to sit on the edge of the beach and look for a ship to come to pick us up, and they'd just go past and they'd come back and say, no, that's not for us, you know. They were worried. Oh, a few of the older ones had left families at home, you know, and when we come back from New Guinea, we only had 2 weeks leave before we went back up to Queensland and did more training at the Atherton Tablelands, actually.
Right.
Right up there. Then we came back to Townsville and on a ship. We didn't know where we were going again, and we went to Bougainville. We were on there for that 12 months.
So when you see people killed, the effect that will have, but also I guess the other side of war is having to kill people, Jack.
Yeah, well, you know, some of our blokes, the sad part about it comes here around about Anzac Day every year. Yeah, I'd be silly if I said I think about it all the time. When Anzac Day comes, you think about the chap that got killed with a mortar bomb right in a trench, you know, 5 yards away, and he was cut in half, you know, and you think of those things now, you know, what his family is thinking today and everything like that. It'd only be his siblings, but it wouldn't be his mother and father, of course.
The bit of reading I did, and thanks for being so honest, as I say, it's a really it's not difficult to ask about. It's difficult to understand, you know what I mean, from where I sit in my privileged life due to the fact of what you went and did. The privileged people like me, it's really hard to understand.
Well, nowadays, Mark, the thing that I noticed in the march, well done, boys. Thanks very much, boys, is coming out a lot more, especially in younger people.
Okay.
You know, and there's a terrible lot of young people with babies in their pram waving and well done, boys, well done, chaps. You know, they've got their own way of saying thank you. And you feel a bit proud that, you know, you did help to keep us. Now, we've got 23 million in Australia at the moment.
Yep.
When I went to war, there was just under 5 million, I think.
Do you think if you hadn't gone, the occupying forces, the Japanese forces, would have found their way to Australia? Do you look back?
Well,
and think,
well, when you look at it, they had Japanese submarines coming into Sydney Harbour, so you wouldn't know where they were really. But up in Darwin, they never got the credit for what they did up there. I was up there a few years ago, and I went to the war cemetery naturally, and I was talking to a couple of the chaps that were guarding them. There was a terrible lot of airmen there.
Mm.
You know, and I thought, how were they, where did they die? They wouldn't have died here. They said, yes, they did. The planes they were flying were like matchboxes and when they tried to land and they'd been shot at on the way home, they just exploded as they were landing. And I couldn't get over how many Air Force men was in that, a lot of Army men too, and I couldn't believe it. They wasn't fighting on the ground, but they were fighting in the air. And then when they come into land, doing their job, thinking we're safe back, and the planes would just crash. Probably had a wheel shot off or something like that. They didn't have retracting wheels, probably in those days.
So now we're at the sort of tail end of 1945, and you can't get home. I did a bit of reading about it. You're stuck in Papua New Guinea for a while.
We could, because a lot of ships had been sunk.
Right.
And we had to wait your turn, and we were there for 4 months.
In
Bougainville.
Right.
Waiting. It was 3 days under 4 months. It ended on the 15th of August, and I got home 3 days before, 12th of December, I got home. And they built a football ground in Bougainville because it was flatter. You couldn't have done it in New Guinea.
Yeah.
And they made the football ground. They played NRL and they played Australian rules. They had athletic carnivals, and they built a little swimming pool.
So there's a lot of legends that float around your life, Jack, for various reasons, and people will begin to understand that as we continue this conversation. But there is a legend that says that you were playing footy in Bougainville, and word got back to Victoria, where, for those that aren't aware, it was then the Victorian Football League, which we now call Aussie Rules. Legend is that word got back from Bougainville to Melbourne that there was this bloke, Jack Jones, who could play footy and he could play it pretty well.
Well, that's where I was recruited from, actually.
So you're Brooke.
When I got home and talked to my mother, you know, I hadn't seen her for a long time.
Can you take me to that moment, Jack? You walked in the door and you see your mum?
Yeah, she was halfway up the street, our street. She saw somebody turn the corner because the lights around the electric light poles in the street were still covered.
Right.
They hadn't taken them all down. They had the lights, they always shone down to the ground. And like they are today, you can see 30 yards from one light to another, you know. Anyway, we got in, we started talking, and then we talked for hours, you know. And she said, there's three letters there for you from football clubs. I said, "Who brought them right to me?" I never had a clue. There was one from Williamstown, one from Brunswick, and one from Essendon.
Right.
I went to Williamstown first because I barracked for Williamstown. My father was born in Williamstown.
So they're playing in the VFA
Association.
Yep.
And Ron Todd, the great Collingwood full forward that went there, was never allowed to come back to play league football because I think he got £2 or £3 a goal.
Right.
Which was a fortune in those days.
My word.
And he didn't want to talk to me. I went over to Brunswick and a chap by the name of Ron Baggett, that he was in the Army, but he got back like me, and he was made coach of Brunswick, and he played in the 39, 40 and 41 premierships for Melbourne before he went into the army. He didn't want to talk to me. So I said, well, I'll have to go up to Wesson. And when I read the letter, I nearly went through the ceiling at home because Dick Reynolds was my idol. You know, yep. I saw him play his first game and everybody loved Dick, as I said before. And I went up there and played in the practice matches and went pretty well. And I got on the list. There was only two got on the list out of 100 that was trying to get on the list. And that's how it happened. That's how I happened to play with Essen. And I played first eight games.
What
the
year?
First game at Essendon.
1946. So this is 3 months back from home from war.
Yeah.
Right.
And I got malaria. Malaria that I didn't get in New Guinea or Bougainville, which a lot of my mates did.
Right.
And I got malaria and I...
So it sat in your system, had it? It had sat in your system, the malaria?
Yeah, right. Yeah, must have been.
Yep.
And I lost a stone in weight and I couldn't play for 2 weeks. And I luckily got straight back into the side, and then I played 133 games straight before I missed a game, and played the premierships and everything, and it was great.
Now, Jack, we see in modern footy, you know, out ankle, out knee, out hand. You don't see out malaria too regularly in footy. There's not many blokes that have missed games of VFL footy due to malaria, I wouldn't have thought.
Well, there's a chap in the league I read in the paper this week, I think it was, or last week. He's got yellow jaundice.
Yeah. Yeah, I read
that's
too.
That's similar to malaria. Yeah. I had that when I was about 10.
Right, right.
The funny thing, you know, I got malaria. I got back in December and I training, and I think it was a late May that I was sick as a dog in bed, you know, and saw this bloke come in, and I didn't know him. His mother said, he's a doctor, and he was from Veteran Affairs, and they gave me all tablets and everything like that, and I took them, and I was right to play in 2 weeks.
2 weeks?
Yeah, I can't believe it, you know. 2 weeks gospel, that's all I lost, 2 games. And even for them to put me back in. Anyway, I've never had it since, thank God.
It's a horrible thing. I had a touch of malaria in my
time. Did you?
Yeah, that I got in a little place called Malawi, a little Lake Malawi in Africa, and I wasn't playing footy in 2 weeks'
it's
time.
It's pretty prevalent now, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is in South Africa at the moment and Central Africa, South America, they get a bit of that as well.
But the mosquitoes are as big as blowflies up and you're getting it. Well, that's what we reckon anyway.
Yeah, they are.
We used to have to take one tablet every day, adamant tablet every day.
Right.
And I never missed. So some of the other blokes that got them up there, they might have been missing and
didn't
not
work.
Worried about taking them.
Didn't work for you though, did it, the old tablet?
Well, it did for a while.
For a while.
Oh, well, I was up there 22 months in the island.
Right.
And I never had it. And then, 3 months later, I got the dreaded thing.
Sat in your system. So you signed up then as a professional? Were you called a professional footballer? You're playing football for a wage?
I had to go up and play with Essendon anyway.
Yep.
But I would have never have gone up there. I didn't think I was good enough to play in the seconds even.
But you're getting paid to play when you're playing senior footy at Essendon?
Oh, yeah, £3.
£3.
50 cents tax.
50 cents tax.
Yeah, £3.
So what were you, if you were a butcher at that stage, what would you have been making?
£6.06.
£6.06 a week?
Yep.
So you got
48 hours.
So you got half your wage again playing footy.
Oh yeah,
so it was a lot of money. It was a good thing.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
But if you didn't play, you didn't get paid in those days.
Right. Right.
Now they've got a contract, especially the good players. If they're out injured, they sure get paid.
So you're
$700,000 a year.
No wonder you came back from 2 weeks of malaria to get back out on the ground. Jack.
Oh well, it was up to them to put me back in though, Mark.
Now it was an extraordinary time for the footy club. You played from, and I was looking at this yesterday and I was trying to get all the facts and figures in my head. You were playing from 1946. You beat Melbourne by 63 points, 47 in the grand final. You lost to Carlton by a point, 48. There was a draw where you bloke
727.
We'll get to 10-9. That one. Then the next year, 49, you beat Carlton. In 50, you beat Essendon by 38. And in 51, you lost to Geelong by 11.
North Melbourne.
North Melbourne by 38. So from 1946 to 1951, there was six grand finals, but you actually would have played in seven because there was a draw.
Yeah, well, we played Geelong in 51.
Yeah.
And they beat us by 11 points, but John Coleman was rubbed out for 4 weeks and he didn't play in any of the finals.
Right.
The last game against Carlton at Princes Park.
Right.
So he was out.
And what did he do? What did he do? This is 1951.
A bloke hit him, but he hit him back.
Did you see it?
Got 4 weeks, yeah.
And he deserved his 4 weeks?
I was playing in front of him. You tap me on the cheek, he had 4 weeks in those days.
Right.
That Richmond captain, well, I forget his name. He got put out of a grand final. He just slapped him on the face as if you're slapping your little kid.
Well, let's try and do this with some form of timeline, Jack. So you're playing your first grand final. You beat Melbourne by 63 points. I reckon you were a reserve then in 1946.
Yeah, I came on in the last quarter.
So what's it like running out in the mid-1940s on grand final day? Tell me about the build-up to a grand final, because you know what it's like now. It's just pretty, out of control.
It was pretty big.
Was it?
We used to have 2,000 or 3,000 at training before the grand final.
Yep.
And, you know, with the population, that was a lot, because everybody in Essendon, Barry for Essendon,
yep,
pretty much in those days. And same with Footscray and Collingwood and everything like that.
And you were playing with some giants, not just of Essendon,
of
the game.
I was there at the right time, Mark.
Some of those
Dick
guys
Reynolds,
you played
Bill
with.
Bill Hutchison, yeah. 5 Brownlow medals in those two. But the thing about it was, in 1951, when Coleman was out, we got beat by 11 points by Geelong.
Yep.
We had a number one ruckman out, John Gill.
Right.
There was no mobile phones in those days and he couldn't get in touch with anybody at the club, but he was very, very sick in bed with a bad flu.
Right.
So he didn't play. So that's why Dick Reynolds was non-playing coach. He had to come and sit on the bench because the seconds were playing in the grand final.
Right.
And none of them would come off and they didn't find out the game was nearly over. So they wasn't going to take the risk of playing one of those players that had already played a game.
Yep.
And so Dick come and sat on the bench and he came on in the last 10 minutes.
So 1946, as you said, you came in the last quarter. You win your first premiership as a professional Essendon football by 63 points. What happens that night? Because you're a man, and this is why you've lived to 91. I don't reckon, talking to you before, I don't reckon you've had a beer in your life, had you?
No, not really.
You say you haven't really had a beer. So how does the 1946 Essendon Premiership side celebrate being the best team in the state?
Yeah, we didn't go to a big motel on that. They wasn't around in those days. So we had it at the club.
Right.
In the training rooms.
Right.
And we were there till 3 o'clock in the morning and that's how we celebrated.
And
I had a lemon squash.
A lemon squash?
Yeah.
And is it front page news the next day? And what was the paper of the time?
Oh, yeah. There was only one writer in every. There's Hector Lacey, the Sporting Globe, and Brown from the Herald Sun.
Right.
And I forget who was the Argus and the Age, but the Argus, you wouldn't remember the Argus.
No.
You heard about it probably.
So this is splashed across the front page. Bombers win grand final, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The next year, Jack.
Well, we were in front all day long.
So we're taking people here that wouldn't be aware. We're going to 1947.
Yeah,
you're playing Carlton. Arch rivals?
Yeah. Oh, not really in those days.
Right.
They were a great club, great team.
Yep.
That's what I thought.
Right.
I can't get over what the two think about one another at the moment. Mm. That's got nothing to do with me, but it's not in my mind anyway. But we're in front all day long, 15 seconds to go. Bloke kicked a goal from the half-forward flank. Over his shoulder, only kicking out all day, really. Might have had 3 or 4.
Yep.
And they bounced the ball and the siren went.
So you lost by a point.
Lost by a point. 1948, kicked 727 to 10-9.
727. Were you part of the 27?
Yes. I won't tell you how many points.
Did you a few, Jack, or not?
I'll never say it and I'm not saying it now.
Okay, we'll keep that under that.
Our full forward kicked 113.
113.
Yeah.
Who was that?
No, I'm not going to name him.
Okay,
sorry.
130. No, don't be sorry.
He's gone, but he was a great player. He finished up full-back for Essendon.
More of Jack shortly. For those that like their history, go back, if you will, and check out episode 35 of the Howie Games, featuring a man who played a big part in one of the most historic moments in Australian sport, in Australian life, really. The skipper of Australia 2 in the America's Cup, John Bertrand.
The celebrations on the wharf I remember the colour and the sounds and the skyrockets going off and people partying. But very interesting enough, our team, all we want to do is get together with ourselves and our loved ones to the oblivion of everyone around partying. It's kind of interesting, you know, it's just the blood relationships of what we'd been through as individuals. So we hadn't, you know, I hadn't touched a beer for 5 months, nor was really any of the team. Mm. So I probably had one beer or one champagne. I couldn't drink anymore. And it was just great sense of contentment of this tightly held team where we'd been to hell and back as an organisation.
That's John Bertrand on episode 35 of The Pod. Let's get back to Jack. Before we get to 49, so you've lost one grand final by a point. You've drawn another one where you've kicked 7-27. You've got belted by Melbourne next week. Do you recall the feeling of the siren when you've got done by a point or when you drew it?
Yeah, we just lay down on the floor in the rooms and didn't talk, didn't say anything. We didn't. I didn't anyway.
Was it a devastation that we see today, or as a matter of fact, I just wonder from where you've come from and what you've seen up there in the highlands of Papua New Guinea, I just wonder how that affects the way you look at your life from then on moving forward.
No, I was disappointed. We had to go to work on the Monday. We never had a bad Monday. I had to start work at 5 o'clock on the Monday morning.
At the butcher's?
Yeah.
Right.
And to get beat by a point, yeah. And then the next year, well, that 48 grand final, we played Melbourne two home and away games. We beat them easily every time.
Yep.
Got to the second semi-final. We beat them again easily. The grand final we got into, and as you know. And the only time they beat us in five contests was the replay of the grand final. So we threw that one away.
Yeah.
The next year, 49, we won by 73 points, I think, or 63. And then next year we beat North Melbourne by 36 points, I think.
You did.
And the next year we played Geelong and got rolled. They beat us by 11 points.
And that was when you're talking about
Smith killed us that day.
That's when you're talking about Coleman was out. I reckon from the reading I did, you beat Essendon by 73 points in 49 and
yeah.
Coleman might have kicked 100 that year.
Yeah, we were running backwards to kick it to him in the last because we were so far in front.
So he needed six.
He needed one more goal. He had five and he needed six.
To bring up the ton.
Yeah, and anybody that would kick to the goal, we'd go crook at him. So we'd kick it backwards to Coleman all the time, trying to kick it to him.
Was he the best, Jack, or who was the best you saw or played with? Because you, as we said, you played with
the best player I played with.
Yeah,
Billy Hutchison.
Billy Hutchison, who was the rover for the Bombers.
Yeah, if he was playing today, he'd be getting 50 touches He never stopped running.
Well, there's tape of the 1950 Grand Final. I don't know who your ruckman was, but he's banging it into
Bob
space.
McCall.
Right,
great ruckman.
He's banging it into space, and your man, he's just grabbing Billy everything Hutchison. Out of the centre and just bombing it forward.
Yeah. Well, there was another chap that played in six grand finals, and he was similar to Coleman, Bob McClure. He's a great ruckman.
Right.
And he fell in the gutter at Hawthorne during the season and he never played again.
That
was
it.
He ripped his knee.
Right.
Similar thing to, he never played football again, similar to Coleman. He was a great ruckman, Bluey McClure.
So we sit here now. We've already been chatting for 55 minutes. Do you mind if I have a bit more of your time? Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, that's all right, yeah.
You sit here now as a three-time premiership player at the Essendon Footy Club, which is, you know, that's a much lauded thing. How do you look back on your footy days? What are your thoughts on being a premiership player and a player at Essendon and a revered figure now at the Essendon Footy Club?
Luck.
Is it?
I was lucky to be there at the right time. You know, I often bring up when people ask me, you know, Bobby Skelton, one of the best players I've seen play the game.
Yeah.
Played in one final, won three Brownlow medals, never played in the grand final. And there's dozens and dozens of blokes, 100 times better footballer than I was. And I had the luck of playing in three premierships and seven consecutive grand finals. How lucky can you be?
It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Oh, it is really when I think about it. I keep pinching myself. And now I can't be broken, that record.
No. No.
Because of the draw.
That's right. They've just got rid of it, haven't they?
Yeah, they got rid of it. Nobody can play.
No. Yeah. So
Well, they can if they win 7 in a row.
I'm not sure it's going to happen now, mate. Not unless the Hawks keep going the way they are at the moment,
yeah,
Jack.
Yeah, that's right.
Luck's an interesting, I guess in some ways you're lucky to even be there, mate. You were unlucky to have to go and do what you did, but you were lucky to get out of there alive.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I was a real run-on Essendon supporter, and I can remember the thing I said to Hutchie. He only lived 3 streets from me. I never knew him.
Right.
I knew him as he was another one of my idols playing for Essendon. Anybody who played with Essendon was an idol of mine, you know, and I walked up to the station with him. We always used to go to the football by train, even the players. And I said, "You think we'll win today, Bill?" I said, "What a stupid..." I often think of it now. What a stupid question I asked him. The captain of the... Oh, no, you know, the champion player of the side, "Do you think we'll win today, Bill?" And I became a... He was one of my best mates.
Right.
Hutchie and Reynolds even, you know. Because I actually carried the casket for Hutchie.
Yeah.
And Leggy Gardner, another player with me, he was a better mate to him than me because I went up to Warby and I lost contact with him for about 10 years, you know.
You went up there and you went up there coaching and living your life and... So you're 91 now. I want to ask you a couple of things that whether you can answer or not. You've been married to Mary for how long?
68 years.
68 years. So... what's the key, Jack? How do you stay with someone? Because when I picked you up today, as soon as I asked you about who you live with and you said your wife and your daughter and you mentioned that your wife was born on Christmas Day and you had a big smile on your face when you spoke about your wife, which that was the first thing that hit me when I picked you up today, how, you know, you just smiled when you talked about your wife.
Yeah,
and you've been with her for 68 years.
Yeah, well, she gave me 100%. She'd never been to a football match when I met her, never ever been to a league game.
Right.
When I first met her. And the first time I took her out, I took her to the football.
That was your first date?
And that was her first time she'd ever been. That was the first.
You old smoothie, you, Jack.
Yeah. Anyway, no, she gave me 100% when I was playing with Essendon. She's not a football person.
No.
But she was so loyal to me, you know. And then when we went to Albury, I was made captain and coach. That's why they got me from Essendon.
Yeah.
She gave me 120%.
Right.
Because, you know, it was the two of us in the marriage, you know, and she used to cook the players' meals up there and everything like that, you know. Bit like a Lambert at...
up at Brisbane
now. At the Brisbane
Lion,
wife. But,
yeah.
No, she was great. But she's got plenty of other interests, but she still likes Essendon because of the youngest daughter because she's a mad one-eyed Essendon supporter and... But she doesn't go to the footy, you know. I've been talking football at home for 68 years, you know, and she gets a bit sick of it.
It'd be fair to say we came here to Channel 10 today so we didn't have to speak football in your home.
Yeah, well,
in front
of Mary. Probably. Yeah, well, I can understand that. She's got so many interests, you know, in welfare and everything like that. So
do you? When you've been with someone for that long, you must have just an innate understanding of them and yourselves as a couple.
The one thing I'll always tell you, Mark, you gotta be prepared to know who's the boss in your house.
Right, who's the boss in your house?
My wife.
Right. Well, that's good advice. That's good advice.
You'll never get anywhere unless you believe that. You have your argument, you know. No, that's not right. That's things like that. But no, she's been great we've got photos around the house, you know, from the grandkids.
Yeah.
The best nana in the world, you know.
Right.
She puts so much into the grandkids or anything like that, so I think she's getting a bit tired. Now we've got great-grandchildren, so...
Well, there's a few of them. So do you love her as much now as the day... Can you remember the first time you told her you loved her or not?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I met her at the dance in Bertie Pond's Town Hall.
Yep.
And we went out a few times and then I had to go back to, in that fortnight I had from New Guinea.
Right.
And we wrote to one another and forwards.
She wrote to you from back and forth from Bougainville.
Yeah,
right.
That's right. And then when I come back, I got in touch with her and we started going together and 2 years later we were married.
Yeah. And you love her as much now as you did then?
Oh, of course, yeah.
Hey, Jack, the time's flown. I really appreciate you sitting down and having a chat with me. I think the idea of the Howie Games is trying to chat with people that have made an impression on me, and I can still remember the first time I met you and I chatted to you.
That was one Anzac Day, Mark.
Yeah, it was. It was. And I keep in touch and I always see at the footy. And, obviously, you through your granddaughter, Sarah, as well, who's doing a fine job on Fox Sports now. But I always see in the rooms and I always go home and I tell Erica, my partner, who's met you before, I saw Jack today. And it just always makes me smile. So to find a little bit about what you've been involved in and what you got up to, it's a real treat, Jack. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and it's ditto about friendship. I really like you, Mark, and thanks very much for asking me to come in to have the interview. I hope it goes all right for you.
It'll go fantastic. Okay. It was an education. I hope everyone out there listening to it gets something out of it like I did, Jack. You're an absolute... you're a credit to everyone you've been involved in. As I said, I'm just proud to call you a mate and great to have a chat with you, mate. Good on you.
Thanks, mate.
Cheers, Jack.
Thank you.
Thanks to Sarah. So much. I wish Jack was still with us to thank him again. I hope you took something from Jack's story and that you share it with your crew. Give your loved ones a hug. Until next time, with Trent Cotchin, peace and love.